You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I am Matt Williamson. It is Sunday evening. I just finished watching Denver Steelers. We have three great Locked On hosts to chat with tonight, and we are going to start with my man Cody Rourke, who... He is the host of Locked On Browns, or Locked On Broncos, I'm sorry, obviously. We are going to talk about Locked On Browns here in a moment. We got two new sponsors. You know, we got a new sponsor, Action Heat. I'm all discombobulated after that Steeler loss, and my bookie. Cody, what's shaking? Welcome to the show. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, obviously a huge win, man. You know, obviously very fun to jump on here and talk football with you after a big win. You know, I know being down there in Pittsburgh right now, I know the mood might not be as bright as it is right now in Denver. But, you know, I think we just saw a very good physical football game that came down to the very end. You know, for 2 weeks in a row with the Steelers, getting a chance at the end of the game to possibly score, you know, it's just a different outcome this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk more Broncos, obviously. That's why we have you on. But the Steeler perspective on this is going to be, boy, the Steelers were the better team. They had more yardage. They moved the football better. But it was the turnover battle. I mean, the Steelers lost the turnover battle 4-0. And really, I mean, again, this is going to be Steeler Nation talking. Shot themselves in the foot. You know, the Xavier Grimble play, Ben at the end, Connor throwing the ball in the air. It was a crazy game from that regard. But that perspective, I think, sells Denver way too short.
Yeah, you know, I think coming into this game, the Broncos, and we saw it in this game, you know, I think it's real evident, Matt, that the Broncos gave up a ton of yardage to Big Ben through the air today, and that's been something that they've done the last 2 weeks, last week against Phillip Rivers, this week against Big Ben, playing a lot of zone coverage. And to be honest with you, I think the Broncos did a great job in their game plan against Antonio Brown, but, you know, like you said, another guy, Ryan Switzer, emerged for them, and Juju Smith-Schuster emerged for them and made some big plays, like you said, at the end. You know, a lot of self-inflicted wounds by the Steelers in this matchup. You know, I think it just goes to a testament, though, that Denver is a gritty team. I think the Broncos are better than their six losses really indicate. You know, they did have a couple really bad losses early on in the year, but yeah, I think this is a big win. Obviously, coming off the bye week, you have 2 weeks in a row, you know, two wins in a row on a, you know, on a schedule I think that gets relatively easier for the Broncos getting ready to go to Cincinnati next week, who, you know, who knows what's going on with Andy Dalton, if he's going to be able to play. And A.J. Green, same thing with him. Then they just lost badly today against the Browns. So, you know, I think the Broncos found some grit. Case Keenum didn't turn the ball over. That was a huge thing for the Broncos in this game, is really against the Steelers not affording to turn the ball over. And we saw, I talked about it earlier this week with Tony Serino, host of Locked On Steelers, that the Broncos, they can't allow Ben Roethlisberger to sit back and just have all this time. But they did, and he had a lot of time. And he continues to display to the NFL world that it doesn't matter. He's one of the best guys in the NFL at the quarterback position because he can extend plays. And with the receiving core that the Steelers have, you absolutely have to try to cover receiver twice, and it was a tough task for the Broncos today. But, you know, Broncos coming out on top in a scrappy game, and I have a lot of positive things to say too about the Steelers. Their offense, as we know it, very explosive. You know, and unfortunately for James Conner, trying to make a play, you know, getting big yardage on that screen play, trying to make an extra move, going up, getting hit and fumbling the ball. It's almost like Bradley Roby has a consistent trend of forcing fumbles against the Steelers late in games. And we seen that in the 2015 divisional playoff game, and we saw it here tonight. But a very tough game, very, very, very physical football game. And I think it couldn't have ended any better for a football fan that's not a Pittsburgh Steelers fan or a Broncos fan. I think that was just a great game overall. Yeah. But, yeah, like you said, I think if you're the Steelers, there was a lot left to be desired out there on the field. You could have done more.
Yeah, and I host a Steeler Nation show every day, and Wednesday was our last show this week, and I said, I picked the Steelers to win, but I said, if the Steelers lose this game, I think these are the factors that will beat them. Will be, they'll lose the turnover battle, Lindsey and the running game will be successful. I didn't, you know, say he has to run for this amount of yards or whatever, but will be a consistent force, and Von Miller and to a lesser degree Chubb are going to wreak havoc. Well, you kind of mentioned it. I mean, Miller had a big play where he late in the game, but overall, the Steelers did a pretty good job of keeping him under wraps, and it looked like a lot of help on that side, you know, with chip blocks, tight ends, all those things. But the other two things absolutely came true.
Yeah, no, it really did. And I was saying it earlier in the pregame show that if Denver wants a chance to win this game, they have to find a way to get to Big Ben. Now, they didn't do it for almost three quarters. They finally got to him with Shaquille Barrett, I think, late in the third. And then you have Shelby Harris, Von Miller getting that one play. But then after that, you know, you have Big Ben connecting with Juju Smith-Schuster for a 16-yard pickup to pick up the first down. So it almost kind of negated that whole entire feature. But I think when we go back on this game, you equate it to some errors. Obviously, a blocked field goal attempt on the first series for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was huge for them, as well as, you know, the tight end, Grimble, essentially going to have one man to beat. If he extends over the end zone, he might get the touchdown. Will Parks comes in and blasts him and forces a fumble, which results in a touchback. Those are some of those plays you go back. If you're the Steelers, if you're the coaching staff, you're like, you play the what-if game, and I know we hate to play that in the NFL, but those things make a big difference in a ball game like this. It's a seven-point game, and really, I think, turnovers as well. But like I said, I think Big Ben played, you know, well enough despite some of those turnovers that I think the Steelers still had a pretty big chance to win this game. They have a lot of firepower, and I they're still going to be a very dangerous team. You know, this could be a wake-up factor for the Steelers, you know, going against a defense in Denver and then being able to prepare for this last run for the season for them. You know, I think in that division, you have Baltimore as well, playing decent, but not too great with Joe Flacco out. But I think overall, the Steelers defensively, you know, you saw some discord on the sideline between Cody Sensabaugh and TJ Watt arguing on that Phillip Lindsay touchdown run. I think the defense for them kind of fell apart late and they got in their heads. I think they became the worst enemy in this game, essentially, for themselves.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said. And my hunch is the altitude had something to do with the two. I always think Denver's the hardest place to play in the league. Two other things I want to touch on, and then I want to tell everyone about Action Heat. Big picture for Denver. They've played the hardest schedule in the league, you know, through, 12 weeks, and it eases up quite a bit going forward. They've got the toughest ones out. They get a huge win here. I think they have a legit shot at that sixth spot now, you know, where I would have never thought that a couple months ago or watching the Jets game. For the Steelers, you know, this was a big loss because I don't think there's any threat in the North, but you still have the Chargers this upcoming week. You got the Patriots. You have to go to New Orleans. So they got their biggest speed bumps ahead. So I think, you know, Denver might build a little momentum here.
It really could for them. You know, like you said, they got to go on the road next week at Cincinnati. How are the Broncos going to play on the road?
Cincinnati's a mess, though.
That's going to be a big test, though, you know, for the Broncos. We saw it. You know, you saw that Jets game. They went on the road in a game they should have. On paper, the Broncos looked like a better team, but they didn't play like that, and they got absolutely blown out and embarrassed. The Broncos can't go into this early game in Eastern time zone with the mindset that they're going to roll over Cincinnati. Cincinnati, I think, depending on a couple things, if Andy Dalton plays, obviously if they get A.J. Green back, that'll be huge for them. But I think the Broncos do have the easiest stretch here. You know, Tony Romo was on the CBS broadcast talking about it, saying, well, now this was the toughest matchup outside of maybe the L.A. game and Week 17 in Denver, where the Broncos have a favorable schedule. You know, you go at Cincinnati, you go at San Francisco, then you have the Cleveland Browns, and then you go and you play the Oakland Raiders again on the road, and then you finish off the season essentially with the L.A. Chargers coming to town. So there could be a lot of different things going there, especially in the AFC West. You know, that bid for that, you know, sixth spot in the wild card chase, that's going to be huge given the fact that all the teams that are in the hunt right now, relatively close. Indianapolis has that five loss record right now. Everybody's behind them right now. So those are going to be some key matchups to watch going forward is how they do, especially with that positioning and that seating.
Yeah, absolutely. Last little note I just want to mention while you're on the horn was, and then I want to tell people again about Action Heat. Case Keenum looked like the Vikings version of Case Keenum. There was a lot of time where I thought the Steelers won up front in the passing game, got pressure on him, and like he did so well last year in Minnesota behind a bad Vikings line, bought time, kept his eyes downfield, eluded the rush with subtle little movements, and made the play, or didn't take the negative. And I think that was huge in this game.
Yeah, it was very huge, and that was a surprising thing that stood out to me because on third down, you saw Pittsburgh did a phenomenal job dialing up pressure on the interior. You know, the Broncos' O-line is relatively very new right now, determining where they have pieces. You have Connor McGovern out center from guard. You have Elijah Wilkinson, Billy Turner in at the guard positions. Those guys didn't previously start at all this season,
right.
So the Broncos are definitely going through the growing pains of a new line, but we saw Case Keenum step out of a couple what looked like to be he was going to be collapsed under pressure, and the pocket collapse, he steps up underneath and finds Emmanuel Sanders, finds Jeff Heuermann. You know, some of those extensive plays that we've seen him do in the past, and I think the Broncos have to get to, I think, a little bit more of that if they want to have success throughout this final stretch of the season. I think that's something they have to really look at in terms of Case Keenum. But yeah, you know, like you said, he did look like the Case Keenum from last year, and that was something I think the Broncos desperately needed.
Cody, besides Locked On Broncos, can you tell everyone else what you're up to, where to find you? And then again, I want to tell everyone about Action Heat.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at CodyRourkeNFL. Do a lot of NFL engagement over there with a lot of great fans across the NFL community, as well as I'm a columnist over at PredominantlyOrange.com covering the Denver Broncos. You can hear all things orange and blue over there at PredominantlyOrange.com, as well as tune in every other week to Orange and Blue 760. I hop on there with First and 10 with 10 with Andrew Mason, Steve Atwater, and Ryan Edwards.
Very cool. And you Denver fans might want to pay extra close attention to this. I told you, I've teased it a little bit with Action Heat. This is the first time I'm telling you about them. I'm in Pittsburgh. It gets chilly here. I love what they have to offer. And what it is it's battery-heated clothing. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but it's really, really cool. Actually, it's pretty hot. It's on demand. You know, all you do is touch a button, and you can control your environment totally. You can get your temperature up to 135 degrees. So if you're sitting there in a week 17 in Denver Stadium, you're going to want Action Heat for sure. It's got a lithium battery. It lasts up to 12 hours on each charge, so you can, you know, do a tailgating post game, the whole deal. Obviously, it's a great idea for anyone in chilly weather climates for the holidays. You know, I mean, absolutely this time of year. The Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including jackets, socks, gloves, hats, even undergarments. So you gotta love that, man. Action Heat is available in men's and women's and has great new styles and models just released for the winter season, which makes perfect sense. Makes activities, even if you're just going sled riding with your kids or building a snowman or something like that, a heck of a lot more enjoyable. So this is what you do. We got a special deal for our listeners. Save 20% off your entire order. So place a big order. Get 20% off. That's the best deal going. Go to actionheat.com/lockedon. All lowercase, all one word, just to be safe. Check out everything Action Heat has to offer. So go to actionheat.com/lockedon. Use our coupon code LOCKEDON, all one word, lowercase, and save 20%. So stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. And we thank them very much for sponsoring the podcast. All right. We are back, and just had a really good conversation with Cody Rourke from Locked On Broncos. Could have went on and on with him. Interesting team right now. But I seem to talk to my man Jeff Lloyd almost every week, and you become one of my go-to guys. And this goes back to Hard Knocks and Hugh and First Pick Overall and all the Browns drama that we've seen in the last 365 days or so. But they're still one of the most interesting teams in the league. And I'm sitting there watching the games with my son, and you know how, like, CBS or Fox or whatever, they put up the playoff race. The Browns were on there, and my son went crazy. He's like, look, Dad, the Browns are on there. They might be relevant in the playoffs even. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but this is a good football team now, Jeff. What is up, dude?
There's no doubt about it, Matt. The product here over the last 3 weeks, even if you go back to the Kansas City game, granted, at the end of the day, they lost, you know, 37-21, but you showed a different side with that team that day. They knew they were up against a stronger, more challenging team. Every time it was fourth down, you know, in the in Chiefs territory, they went for it. They were mixing things up. You know, they were playing to win. You know, at the end of the day, obviously, they lost by 2 touchdowns to Kansas City. A lot of teams are doing that, but you parlay that going to the Atlanta game and win going away. And as this week went on, because early in the week, there was a weird one right around Wednesday. I know it was when I did the crossover that all of a sudden there was a possibility out of nowhere. AJ Green might be back. Yeah. It did give me some pause and some hesitation. Then as the week went on and it wasn't going to be, we're going to see AJ Green. I said, this isn't going to be close, because when you sit down at the end of the day and you look at the Cincinnati Bengals, besides A.J. Green, there's nothing that's going to keep you up at night as a defensive coordinator. And the way the offense had been humming the last couple of weeks, and Baker just finding anybody to make a play, because we talk about this a lot, you know, everybody, oh, well, Baker needs this, and if Odell's available, the most important receiver to Baker Mayfield Jr. is the one who, I mean, Baker Mayfield is the one who's open.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
Right.
If you're open, he doesn't distinguish. He's throwing you the ball. You better make the play. He may not look your way the next time. But it's just been beautiful to watch. Baker's on fire. You've obviously got a real solid running back in Nick Chubb, also adding it to himself into the the pass receiving game now as well. The defense, you get that Myles Garrett, and he was able to close it out today because he just had Cedric, boy, he's scared for his life and just jumping on every snap towards the end because that's the presence Myles Garrett's bring. And there's just a bunch of other guys, you know, they can go. And we talked about this in the summer. They could have a lot more teeth in their defense. They now go 15-19 with confidence, the guys they can put on this field. And it shows, I mean, they're starting to play a little bit more of a D-line rotation, which was an issue earlier in the year. But it's a real nice product. And look, you get Cincinnati again. You get Baltimore again. You get Houston. You have Denver also on that schedule and Carolina. I mean, right now it looked like, oh, man, let's finish this up and let's see where we fall draft-wise. No, go win some games. These kids are playing with confidence. You know, the Cavs aren't very good. You know, the Indians are looking to blow things up. It's the Cleveland Browns city, and the time is now. I know it's been a phrase for about 30 years, but this time there might be really some teeth to it.
Yeah. I'm going to tell people about my bookie here in a moment when we're done. But as I do every Friday, I go to my bookie and I pick games. And I couldn't believe that the Browns were a dog in this game. I mean, like, this totally shocked me. Like you said, even if A.J. Green played, I know that's a big variable. But, I made some bucks this weekend. I'm like, dude, the Browns are the much better team than Cincinnati. And they pretty much showed it from the start. I mean, you touched on a lot of things I wanted to talk about. But the three stars that really showed up for me was Myles Garrett was great. Baker was in a breeze-like fashion to the open receiver, like you talked about. It was on fire to start this game. And the running was, you know, tough to come by for Chubb, but makes a great catch, and he looks like a star.
Nick is such a special guy, and getting to more and talk more and more with some of the beat writers within the Cleveland, they actually call him old school, and, like, they got to calm him down on Wednesday. They're like, look, Nick, it's all about 30 touches on Sunday. It's not about how hard you can practice on a Wednesday. You know, like, they're already having to explain to him about the longevity of the position where he was a kid who was taught all his whole life. You show up every day and you put in every drop of work. Now for him, it's, you know, I'm the featured guy. I got to do everything I need to be ready for Sunday. And you're starting to see that. I mean, the touchdown catch, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, you would never expect a running back alive to make that play, let alone a wide receiver. It's just that difficult. And for this guy who did not have much pass receiving experience to be able to pull off a reception like that, it just shows the confidence level that not only he has, but that everybody on this team does. And even that first drive. And this is what we talked about earlier. You know, people wanted a feature receiver. Well, the problem with a great overall number one receiver is you've almost got to force feed 10 to 15 targets a game. And like I said with Baker Mayfield, find the open guy and he'll feed him. You know, Darren Fells with another touchdown. David Njoku, again, you know, a couple of quiet weeks, big week, you know, big bounce back week this week. Duke Johnson a little quiet this week. That's okay. We'll get the rest of the receivers involved. Antonio Callaway, the fourth round pick, who had his struggles. But since the old regime has been kicked out these last 3 weeks, he's been putting together some consistent football also himself. So it's just fun to see. It's a bunch of young guys with a median age of 25 or less.
Yeah, and one thing we didn't bring up, but we have in recent other Sunday night conversations, is Joe Schobert. I think the D is clearly better with him out there. A very good player.
He is.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's the MVP of that defense. If you were going to draft individual players, he'd probably go fifth or sixth. But if you were drafting matter of importance, it'd be Joe Schobert, number one, without question. The knack that he has of, I mean, you hear it coached, and I remember being taught it, is carry your guy into the next zone. And Joe Schobert literally has his hand on that guy's hand. And he's almost like a crossing guard looking for the guy's mom. Okay, there's the next guy. Go ahead. You're off to the next zone. He's just so technically sound in everything he does. And everybody is lined up perfectly when Joe Schobert is on that field.
Good stuff. Okay, I think we've talked about this too, but things are going well. Are you making a coaching change this offseason still?
I think you got to bring somebody in. I do believe everybody understands. You know, look, things were really bad for Greg Williams to even get an interim gig. Look, Greg has his warts. He right. has his past. Everybody knows that. But one thing I kept hearing from everyone Cleveland related is they love the Greg Williams fit with what they got going on with this defense. And I think at least by giving him the interim gig, it says, look, Greg, we maybe know long-term what's best for you and for us. Look, we want to kind of somehow keep this marriage going. And look, does Greg want to deal with the media on, you know, the Monday after when the offense didn't play well? Probably not. You know, this is what Greg Williams is. He's a defensive coordinator. And the other thing is he wants to do all he can to get his son to the path where he can launch his career without, you know, having to be referred to as Greg Williams' son. So, and for Greg to stick here and what he's done with this defense and the work he's put in, if you can find the right fit to come in here, and whether it's a Bruce Arians and maybe, you know, you like Freddie Kitchens and that works, you know, maybe that's not enough change, but who knows? Or if you bring in an Eric Bieniemy, who's just kind of an all-around coach who will talk to all 53-year players, Greg Williams takes care of your D, you find a guy to run your O. I think you'd really, really be foolish to, unless you had to and something better came along for Greg, to cut ties with Greg Williams. And I think Greg would be totally happy remaining here in the defensive coordinator role.
Yeah, and I like the OC too.
Oh, he's done fantastic. Yeah. And the one thing about it is he's done different things. And he came back again with it this week. He ran a couple of plays out of a wishbone set. You know, like we saw last Sunday night in the Bears game, they ran the T for a couple of plays. Have some fun with it. You know, just that's the stuff that keeps the kids and they're intrigued. You know, veterans be like, oh, this is crap. What are you doing? You know, younger guys, you know, your third running back's like, wait a minute. There's a set that I'm in. All right. This is cool. He's on the field with Nick Chubb. He's on the field with Duke Johnson. It's a way to keep all 53 engaged. And the best thing about it is, though, is when you got to go ask that dude to do something out of his comfort zone, the guy's like, all right, man, if you're looking out for us, I got you. I got you on this. I'll take care of that. And it's just good coaching, and it's a way to work back and forth. And Freddie Kitchens has been fantastic to this point. And keep in mind, never called plays. Guy was a quarterback in college, a running back coach for Arizona. But he's just finding a way to make it work, and he's making it work with a rookie. So it's just fun to see how everything is coming together. And look, these next five games, playoffs, no. I mean, I'm not there yet. I mean, there's a lot to possibly happen. But show up every week. Play 60 minutes of football and see where the chips may fall.
Yeah, and beat up on a division opponent. You know, I mean, that's got to be great, fun to see, right?
But with Cincinnati again and with Baltimore again, what does that give you possibly going in 19 right off the bat? We know we're the second best team in the division. So that's one thing you knocked off the shelf already. You know you're the second best team in the AFC North going in 19. You haven't even acquired a free agent. You haven't even drafted a player. For what that can do for that building, them coaches, those players, man, that's a lot of work to be done in just 1 year after going 1-31 over the last two.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I could talk forever. Jeff, tell everyone where you're at besides Locked On Browns, which is, of course, must-listen material. And then I'm going to tell everyone about my bookie. And I hope everyone followed my lead and bet on the Browns.
Well, I did because I mentioned it on my pregame show, and luckily I was in Atlantic City, Matt. So nice. I was able to jump across the sheet right to a sports book. And as you know, Matt, you may know, the Locked On pay money came in yesterday. My wife's like, don't go nuts. And I usually don't. But yes, yeah, a nice little return. And it did pay for birthday dinner for my daughter on her 12th birthday last night. So that was a nice one. But honestly, Locked On Browns has become the baby. I mean, with the show picking up the way it is, the way the team is picking up what it is, the shows require more work. They require more detail. You know, Matt, as you know, to consistently come in top 10 with the network the way we've been able to for the last couple of weeks at Locked On Browns requires a lot of work. So follow me over at Jeff LJ_Lloyd. It's all NFL, guys. It's everything. You know, I do follow the draft as well. But for the Browns and being a part of this, I took this over last year in late September, which was, you know, some of my friends were like, seriously, dude, is this really what you're going to do? You're going to cover the Browns on a daily basis? But starting to see the fruits of the labor and some of these guys reaching everything, it's been a really fun ride to this point.
Absolutely. And it's great having you on. I'm sure we'll talk again. We've talked a lot lately. My bookie is good stuff. I tell you guys this all the time. I hope you're finally listening. I hope you're already on board. I hope you're already using our promo code. Friday's show was a blast. I had my old buddy Robert Flores come on, and I let him basically host it. And two of us chatted, and I told everyone to take the Browns, especially if you're going to give me three. So, like I've told you, I mean, that's why I'm urging you to make your way to my bookie. You know, you win, they pay. They have great in-game live betting. I love their over-under on fantasy points. They have the most rewarding player perks in the business. And as I've told you before, they are so swamped because they're doing such good work that they would prefer that you made your deposit after 7 o'clock Eastern. And what they're going to do is they're going to give you 25 free bucks to do it on any deposit over 100. I mean, that's free money, guys. So use our promo code LOCKEDON25, all one word with a 2-5 on the end, LOCKEDON25. That's MYBOOKIE. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25. If you're willing to hold out till 7 o'clock Eastern, you get an extra 25 free bucks, which is stealing. So, again, use LOCKEDON25. It's up to you guys, but I would certainly wait and, you know, make the deposit later. Again, you play, you win, you get paid. All right, we are bringing in the last leg of the Sunday night show with Locked On Seahawks host Spike Friedman. Spike, it's great to chat with you again. How are you?
Good, good. How are you, Matt?
I'm real good, real good. Fun day of football. There weren't a lot of marquee games, but I would say Seattle, Carolina was maybe at the top of the list for the afternoon games, and massive playoff implications. Big win on the road, man.
Yeah, absolutely huge. 48% leverage going into the game. So you're talking about coming out of this with the Seahawks having a three-quarters chance of making the playoffs, which, frankly, even my most optimistic version of the season, I didn't think we'd be there right now.
No, I didn't either. I was very down on this team going into the league. I thought it'd be, you know, a massive rebuilding year, a 6-10 type of year. And even with Russell Wilson, who, as great as Wilson's been, I'm not so sure that he's not playing his best football right now.
Yeah, I mean, this was an incredible second half. And it really comes down to he was taking chances and big plays in a way that we haven't seen in a little while. And that comes down to a much improved offensive line and a surprisingly effective group of weapons at wide receiver. Doug Baldwin, he just missed a touchdown early in the game. Wasn't a huge factor. It was nice that he suited up. He made a couple big plays. But Tyler Lockett and David Moore were both huge on Sunday. And those are two guys that you don't think of as being excellent. Lockett obviously had a great rookie year, ton of potential there. Moore is sort of coming out of nowhere to be an excellent deep threat. Now, some of that, I'm going to give credit to Carolina, or maybe not credit, maybe that's the wrong word, but they were running out their third and fourth string defensive backs. You know, at a certain point when you're beating Corn Elder at the end of a game,
right,
like you don't see that coming as the way that the Seahawks essentially grabbed the reins for a wild card slot in the NFC. But I'll take it. And Wilson is just so accurate right now. He had some issues early in the season with his accuracy. Those seem to have gone away, and he's, you know, he's back up over 100 for his career passer rating.
Wow. And a couple things I wanted to touch on there, too, is I wasn't real impressed with how the Panthers' D was playing coming into this game, and now it looks even worse. But that Moore and Lockett are two guys I have here that all of a sudden, you know, you have a decent core of receivers, where I thought it was going to be the Doug Baldwin show this year, and that's all, you know?
Yeah, my pessimism about this team was about the weapons. It looked like a bottom five group coming into the season. The fact that they're at or maybe a little above league average with the way Lockett has developed, Moore's emergence, and then those three running backs, who even though the running game didn't really get going today, you saw Chris Carson's explosiveness, what he can do. Obviously, there was the play where he got flipped and kept going after getting hit by it. Incredible play.
Right? Yeah.
But, I mean, even beyond that, it was him turning in a Marshawn Lynch-esque way, one-yard losses into three-yard gains. That's the sort of thing that this team has to do to be effective. And even though the running game wasn't where it's been recently, and I thought they would be, man, that Carolina defense looked bad against Detroit, especially against the run. The fact that they were able to do just enough with the running game to keep themselves in it, hey, love it, love it. Love watching these weapons develop.
Yeah, I bet. And I want to, of course, get back to the Seahawks here in a minute, but really good game all in all by DJ Moore. Cam McCaffrey put up massive numbers, although he fumbled three times. I mean, like, they have some star power on that offense, but watching this team and studying them going into the week, do you feel like there's a little something off with the Panthers? I kind of do ever since that Thursday night blowout in Pittsburgh and then, you know, going for two last week and not getting it. It feels like something's not quite clicking.
Yeah, I mean, they put the ball on the ground a lot this week. Like, there's a degree to which the Panthers might feel hard done by this result, but I think they fumbled five times and wound up recovering all five. So this could have been a disaster for them. And yeah, they were getting lanes for McCaffrey. They were getting him open. DJ Moore looks good, but it feels like there's something off. Maybe it's the way they're using the tight end. Felt like they ended up the huge play was going to Manhurts instead of Greg Olsen. That ends up turning into an interception by Bradley McDougald. Then on the other side of the ball, they still have all those guys. They still have Kawan Short. They still obviously have Keekly and Davis. But there's just something about that defense that isn't right. Now, obviously, a lot of it is those cornerbacks are bad. They lost, right. I believe, Dante Johnson early in the game. They just weren't themselves in the back. But that Ron Rivera defense is supposed to be able to survive not having good cornerbacks. That's the whole deal.
That's how they draw it up, right.
Yeah, exactly. So it was very weird to see them be effective against the run, but essentially ineffective against the pass all day on Sunday. It's a little off there, and I don't know. It's just, you know, all those teams that aren't the elite of the NFC, which is pretty much just the Rams, Saints, and maybe the Panthers if you're, or no, I'm sorry, not Panthers, Bears if you're feeling generous. Everybody else is flawed. And so for me, this game, the Seahawks-Panthers game, was, I described it as a great game played by pretty good teams. The Seahawks and the Panthers, they're both flawed in different and interesting ways, but it led to a really thrilling game. So yeah, both teams were a little off. I mean, man, that Seahawks secondary was dreadful. Dreadful at points, but hey, they did just enough in the red zone to get the W.
Yeah, it's huge. I remember I had the Locked On Panthers host on, I guess it was just 2 weeks ago, two games ago, and we both were like, oh, Panthers are a playoff team. I mean, like, there's no doubt. I mean, just 2 games ago, and that's, I think that's far from a done deal now. Let's move it back to Seattle. And Spike, the last time you were on, I really liked a question and answer thing that we did was pick out three or four Seattle defensive players that my audience might not know are good players, but they really are. Because there's a lot of them.
Yeah, there are. I mean, it's tougher after this week where a lot of guys...
Yeah, maybe not the best time to phrase that.
Didn't show up. But I'm going to give a lot of credit to Trey Flowers at cornerback again. A conversion project really sort of playing out of his mind at CB2. He feels like he misses one big play every week. He had a missed tackle that led to a big gain. But he also made that huge game-saving shoestring tackle that led to Graham Gano missing a long field goal. If he doesn't make that tackle, Panthers can get that way closer, have a chance to run out the clock and kick it from 40. That ends up leading to a totally different result in this game. I believe I mentioned Jaron Reed last time I was here. Some other guys in that pass rush are interesting. None of them got home today. Quentin Jefferson, Jacob Martin didn't really have the impact they've had in recent weeks. But I'll throw out the name Austin Calitro. He's a guy. Yeah, right?
Going deep.
Yeah, he's a backup linebacker who's been forced to play a lot of snaps with K.J. Wright out. And he's not K.J. Wright. I mean, K.J. Wright's ability to cover the field left to right, blow up screens, do all those things that K.J. Wright's done for this team for the better part of a decade. Calitro can't do all of it, but he's a sound tackler. He's good positionally. I mean, and again, I haven't seen the All-22 on this game, so I don't know. It could be that his positioning is why Christian McCaffrey gashed us over and over again. But Calitro is that really solid second linebacker in certain moments. And I thought he played pretty solidly today, and he's a guy who nobody has heard of. So I'll throw him out. And then the last one is Barkevious Mingo. Makes an impact all over the field. The real Swiss Army knife of the defense. Great signing by John Schneider this offseason.
Spike, I hate to cut you short, but I could go on and on and on with these conversations. We like to keep them real succinct. Where can everyone find you besides Locked On Seahawks? Everyone needs to check out the Locked On Seahawks stuff, too. It'll be a really fun week, I'm sure, on your podcast as well.
I actually write for the Alternative Weekly in Seattle, The Stranger, so I'll have a recap up of the game there.
Oh, nice. Okay. That is going to do it. One little programming note this week. Sage will be back on, as he always is, but it's going to be tomorrow. I have some personal things I have to take care of on Tuesday, so there won't be a show Tuesday. The Tuesday show is getting bumped back to Monday. So if there's anything or any quarterbacks in particular you want me to bring up with Sage, drop me a note on Twitter, at WilliamsonNFL. This was a really fun Sunday night show, as they always are, talking about three really exciting teams. So spread the word about the Locked On Network. Go check out your favorite teams. And that is a wrap. Over and out.